for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's December 2020, and you're listening to episode 213, which is a conversation about the dangers of social media as it's presented in the Netflix documentary film, The Social Dilemma. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Ashley Hales, who has a PhD from the University of Edinburgh and is the author of Finding Holy in the Suburbs and the forthcoming book, A Spacious Life, to be released in 2021. She is also the host of the Finding Holy podcast. Ashley has written an online exclusive film review for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called The Social Dilemma and What It Means for Christians. You can read it for free online at our website, equip.org. Ashley, it's good to have you on.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here, Melanie.
Well, we're talking today about a Netflix documentary that came out this fall called The Social Dilemma, not to be confused with the film, The Social Network, about Facebook. But this film has generated quite a lot of buzz, mainly, I would say, among parents, but a lot of different groups that have, you know, for the first time been confronted with various different interviews from former like executives, employees, and people that were really high up, particularly in the social media companies, tech companies in Silicon Valley. But also there's some interviews with various professors, including one at Stanford. And for some of our listeners that don't know, Stanford has the number one rated undergraduate computer science program in the country. And not only that, Google founders, Sergey Brin and the other guy that founded Google, they both met at the graduate program in Stanford. So it seems that a lot of people did go to Stanford in the tech industry, and that's why there's you find so many companies in Silicon Valley. So just given all of that and just the content of the film, which, you know, I want to unpack with Ashley, but really it's kind of giving people on the outside, the user, kind of an inside look into what is really happening with the programming, particularly with social media. And so after you watched this film, and I've watched it also, what were your initial reactions having, you know, heard all these different interviews from insiders of Silicon Valley?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, as an academic, I've been trained to read text and to be concerned not just with what or how, but with why. And so I think looking at this film particularly, I started asking questions about why these, you know, algorithms are created the way they are. You know, what are these kind of the ends of these, you know, artificial intelligence? As a mom, of course, I was concerned. There's this fictional kind of side story of, you know, this young girl and the way in which social media has kind of changed her own perception of herself. And as a Christian, I'm also trained, of course, like all of us, to see how our habits affect our spiritual formation. So it really left me with a lot of questions about the intention of social media, its uses, its purposes, how it's forming us spiritually, how it captures our affections. And, you know, there is kind of a lot of sort of doomsday sort of prophecies in the film, but it does help us to ask some really good questions about how we're formed. And I think at the very least, it allows us as viewers to be aware of the effects of social media upon us and to begin to make intentional choices towards that end rather than simply consuming social media without thinking.
And in case our listeners don't know what an algorithm is, because you mentioned an algorithm, it's computer programming. Okay, people who are computer programmers are probably going to say that I'm not saying this correctly, but this is a mom of somebody who has a degree in computer science. So my understanding, a very lay understanding as an English major of an algorithm, it's just a computer code or process that helps your computer to solve different, you know, data points and analyze those data points. And so that's kind of what it is. And the thing about this movie in particular is all of the social media that we use have different algorithms to basically, it's taking behavioral science and psychology to kind of anticipate what different users are going to do of those platforms. So when I say social media, in case depending on your age, whether or not you use some of these platforms, we're talking about Twitter and Facebook and Snapchat and even things that are professional like LinkedIn, that is also a social media site, as well as things like Pinterest. A lot of women use Pinterest to find, you know, different recipes or, you know, house decorating ideas and those kinds of things. So in this film, I just described different platforms there are of social media. What kind of problems out there does social media itself and the use of it bring up?
You know, the film tends to kind of focus on three main problems in these algorithmic understandings of social media. The first is the way in which we are being marketed to with around ideas about surveillance capitalism, which is basically saying, you know, for instance, Google is getting all of your data and it knows how to market to you. And so it will market to you in ways that are increasing, you know, as the algorithm shifts, right, that are increasingly likely for you to purchase. But then beyond just simply, you know, buying a cute new pair of shoes, for instance, that they're not only telling us what to buy, but also have so much access to our own personal data. So that's a fear. The other thing that they tend to bring up in the film is the way in which social media can affect our mental health. And of course, there's been many studies done on all of this, but we've seen even particularly for young girls that things like self-harm, depression, even suicide has gone up exponentially over 70%. And, you know, since teens have been using social media. And, you know, they're talking too about that. They're saying like the average person is usually on a screen up to, I think, 8 hours a day. And social media is a really big chunk of that, especially for our teens. And then the third problem that the film brings up is this idea of political or cultural destabilization. There's a theorist who talks about us in the film as kind of lab rats. That, you know, he says there's a widely known quote that there's only two areas in which the people are called users, right? And that's social media users, right? And of course, drug users. And so if they say, you know, if you don't know what the product is, if you don't have access to the product, then you are the product. And so I think some of these problems, hopefully thoughtful Christians have considered and have, you know, worked into how they think about formation, how they think about their time usage as a way to worship God. But for those of us who haven't, I think it's a really great wake-up call, at least, to begin to understand that these platforms are not neutral.
Years ago, I had done various different talks at women's retreats and conferences about social media. And there was a film, I think it was a CNN documentary, came out in 2015. It was called Being 13, Inside the Secret World of Teens. And the interesting thing that I saw in that one was they were talking about kids they follow these 13-year-olds around with their phones and just kind of just document how they use them. And then one of the girls in there said, well, don't judge me, but to get the selfie that I want to put up on social media, I take 100 pictures. So just to get one. And so you think, well, what is the time involved for you to take 100 pictures of yourself and then look at those photos of yourself and then decide that out of these 100 photos, you're going to put up one that you then put filters on and things like that. And in case there's some parents that might not be as tuned into social media, on the ones that have photographs, whether it's a photograph of, you know, your vacation spot or a person, you could put a filter on it to make it look more vibrant or to add makeup to your face or to get rid of blemishes. And so it's kind of like Photoshop. I think maybe even the average person knows what Photoshop is, and that's available on a lot of, you know, photo applications that you have on a smartphone. And something just to remind people of, I think sometimes we think of our phones as phones, but they really aren't. Our smartphones are pocket computers. So basically what we're carrying around is a computer with all of these different programs and apps and the way that people are being tracked. And it's interesting. I help manage the YouTube channel for the Christian Research Institute. And someone had a comment. They were complaining about the ads that they saw. They said, how can you have these terrible political ads? To which I replied, we don't choose those ads. Those ads are based on your behavior or somebody using your computer's behavior. So if this is not a public computer, it could be anyone sitting, you know, at the library before you. But if it is a public computer and you're concerned about the ads that you're seeing, then you better ask the people that are sharing this computer with you. So I don't know if everybody realizes how much their behavior in terms of online behavior and shopping purchases, as you mentioned, marketing, are being tracked with these algorithms. And then that data is being stored so that it can be used as you even just surf the internet. So as we think about social media in general and all these different, you know, very well-known applications and sites, what does the use of social media and the fact that it exists and it's tracking us with all these algorithms, what does that mean in terms of bringing up larger issues of truth?
Mm-hmm. You know, what I think is so fascinating, and I think we've become more aware of it, especially in the last 5 years or so, is that, for instance, depending on your political affiliation, or we realized in the 2016 election primarily that people had very different understandings of what was true and what was not true, based primarily on their Facebook feed. And of course, it's in all platforms and, you know, YouTube as well and different channels. But we're realizing, I think, the extent to which these algorithms continue to show us what we want. They don't actually challenge us, right? They're not virtuous in the sense of, you know, that they're trying to help us see many points of view or grow our character or, you know, to learn how to have conversations across difference. They're just showing us more and more what we want and often kind of forcing us down these sort of rabbit holes that we see in the film. The film brings up about, you know, kind of these political destabilization that's happening across the world and the way in which democratic elections are not nearly as clear. But what we see there, what that's really pointing to, is that we tend to think what we see on our screen is true, but not realizing that on someone else's screen, they think of that as true. And so it has really eroded the idea that there is some sort of objective truth that resides outside of what we see, outside of the media that we consume, which is really, I think, very, very frightening. In a recent article, Alan Noble, who's a professor at Oklahoma Baptist University and an author, says he talks about the way in which truth has been kind of used for political power. And he says that, you know, when we don't care about truth, that the positions we take and the policies we advocate, even if it's in the name of morality or justice, are not going to actually be restrained by truth. It's just we use truth or whatever we consider to be truth for the means of political power or just power in general over another person. And so I think we have to realize that social media is just giving us what we see, and it's going to push us towards an extreme through its algorithms. And as Christians, we need to continually bring our sense of truth, right, as the word of God versus whatever, you know, hot take we see on a social media platform.
And I think as Christians that we also have to really be careful about ways in which social media that we see starts shaping our views against biblical truth, whether it's in the issue of biblical sexuality or even just anthropology, you know, seeing how God has created you and that it's a good thing as opposed to wanting to show a different person of who you would like to be instead of who you are. And so I just want to let our listeners know we have a lot of resources. I will have this linked at the landing page. We're not going to get into it in this discussion, but in the movie, they do bring up the whole issue of artificial intelligence and, you know, algorithms and can the AIs take over. And also we've covered issues of social media before and truth back, oh, I don't know, more than 50 episodes ago. I did a podcast about responding to the rise of emotionalism and the called If I Feel It, It's True. And I think that we talked about how a couple of years ago, the word post-truth came into vogue, meaning that people, especially the younger generation like Gen Z, maybe millennials, they decide what is true based on what they feel about a subject, whether or not that is true or not. So that's something that Christians really need to be aware of, especially because we believe that Christianity teaches objective truth, that even if someone doesn't agree with it, it is objectively true. You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Dr. Ashley Hales, who has written an online exclusive film review article of the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. You can read her article, which is called The Social Dilemma and What It Means for Christians, for free online at our website, equip.org. It's the holiday season, and we hope that you are thinking about gifting a subscription for $33.50 to your pastor, some friends, or family members who would like to be equipped in doctrine and discernment issues, as well as articles and podcasts that will help them to fully experience the Christian life and life in Christ. And so you can give a gift subscription at our website, equip.org, very easily. And also, just a reminder, as I do every podcast, that the best way that you can help us out is to rate or review us wherever you get your podcasts, but specifically really help out at Apple Podcasts. That's probably the go-to for most people. And we only have 49 ratings. And the last time we had a written review was way back in the summer in August. So if you could head over there and give us a gift this holiday season and please rate or review our podcast, that'd be great. You can easily review it with just stars. But if you have a moment to write down a couple of sentences about why you listen, that'd be great. And I know a lot of people listen because we have thousands of downloads every month, but only 49 ratings and no one has given us a written review for a while now. So we would really appreciate that. And another way you can help us out if a subscription or gift subscription is not in your budget is to go ahead and go on over to equip.org. If you go to the main page and you see magazine, click that. And Postmodern Realities is in the drop-down menu at the second slot. Click on that, and at the landing page for any episode, you'll find a way you can tip us. And you could give us a tip of like $3 or $5 or $10. It's just a way to help us continue to bring you all this content, especially the Postmodern Realities podcast, which as of this episode, we're up to 213 episodes. That's a lot of content since we started it in 2016, and we want to keep bringing this podcast to you weekly. So thank you for all the ways in which you support us and share our content and help others to find out about it. Well, we're kind of digging into the subject of social media and how it's portrayed and how it's used in our lives as users. And I just wanted to ask you, because we were talking about truth and the Bible, you know, how is social media usage really impact our own spiritual formation?
Mm-hmm. You know, what we do really shapes us. And I think, you know, that's an obvious statement to say, but, you know, the way that we brush our teeth, right, every day shows that we care about our dental hygiene, right? And that we want to take care of our bodies that God has given to us. And so when we think about spending time reading the Bible, when we think about fellowshipping with people from church or memorizing scripture, spending time in prayer, we are shaped increasingly by the things of God, right? When we do those sorts of things, that's kind of our diet that feeds our imagination. And when we spend a ton of time, right, on social media, what begins, like we were saying earlier about the truth being eroded, is that as we see different messages, as we, you know, maybe our envy is piqued when we see the fancy vacation that someone else is taking or something, that we begin to cultivate other things, right, in our hearts through social media. I mean, social media is meant to keep us discontent, right? It's meant, and it profits by our attention. And the reason we keep being attending to it, right, is that we get some sort of kind of dopamine hit, right? You get the like or the retweet or, you know, the heart on Instagram, and all of these things kind of keep our attention. And so I think one thing that's helpful for me as we think about this is there is a current theorist, Yuval Levin, and he has a recent book about institutions called The Time to Build. And he talks about that platform is performative and institutions instead are formative, that they mold us kind of like a Bundt cake mold, right? It molds the cake. And a platform, whether that's Instagram or Facebook or YouTube, is actually performative. And so what that means is if we're thinking of ourselves standing on the stage and requiring all these pictures or whatever of ourselves to mediate our own lives, that actually that's causing us to kind of set ourselves up as mini gods, right? That we're in control, we're in charge, and we're creating reality for ourselves instead of being subject and formed by things like the church and our kind of daily scripture and prayer practices. So So I think there's just ways in which we just simply don't realize that social media can often exploit the very sinful human heart that we all have instead of actually forming us towards the things of God. It's not to say we can't use social media for good ends. You know, we're having a conversation that will be probably broadcast right on social media at some point. But it is to say that we need to be careful about how we are being formed and what is shaping us.
You talked earlier about just how social media feeds are curated. So somebody could be on the same platform, say Facebook, and they could see a reality that's one way and somebody could see a reality that's another way. Now, and you also mentioned community. So why does it seem that, especially I would think that social media tends to result in tribalism. And what I mean by that is not necessarily political, but if you, it's so granular now. I'm sure if I could find, you know, stay-at-home moms who cook from scratch, who have teenagers and like tennis, I could join that group. And then there would be people in that group. And so I wouldn't have to interact with other moms who did not play tennis or cook from scratch because I would have this Facebook group curated just for me. And the more that I went to that group, Facebook would show me more and more posts from that group. And so why is it easier for us to do that as opposed to, you know, when you think of the church, it can be very difficult. We're sinful human beings. There can be conflict in the church. The church is full of all kinds of different people. Some of them do not have our same interests. They don't like tennis. They like something else. And so how is it, you know, for the Christian, how do we kind of pry ourselves away? Because sometimes if we go to church and no one is like us and doesn't have our same interests, then we go online and we kind of feel like, oh, well, here's my people. Here's this tennis-loving moms group. How do we break ourselves of that to interact with, you know, the moms who don't play tennis or don't play sports at all or do something else? They knit or something. How do we do that as, you know, Christians in the life of the church?
Mm-hmm. I think that's such a great question because, I mean, you see that even just with the rise of like celebrity pastors, right? And so no pastor meets up to your actual local pastor, you know, if you can go listen to like all of your favorites, right? and just listen or watch their, you know, their services and their backlogs instead of actually dealing with real people with real flaws. And so I think you're exactly right in that issue. And the question about like, how do we begin to kind of break apart those sorts of things is to begin, I think, to be curious about, you know, even monitoring our time, right? How much time are we spending online and what are we using our time online for? You know, if we say it's for connection and yet our connections then, you know, are solely online where we can kind of still present the best part of ourselves because, you know, they're not, these friends on the internet aren't around when you're having an argument with your spouse or you're trying to figure out who's going to get the oil changed. And they're not around, you know, when we're in conflict or just kind of awkward times with members of our church body. And so I think even just being aware of what are the times, like to what extent are we spending time online and to what extent are we spending time with people who are in our actual physical places in our neighborhoods and in our churches. And then I think, you know, just to remember that what is so beautiful about the gospel, right, is even like in the first century, we have so many letters, right, from Paul talking about all of these different factions, whether they're ethnic factions or religious factions, if they were Jews or if they've been Gentiles who've been grafted in. And that what is so beautiful about the gospel is that it creates a new people and only because it is the very power of God, not because, you know, we like tennis, right? And so I think really it belies a sense when we simply take the easy way out to be friends or to communicate or have depth of relationship with people who are the same as us, it really belies the fact that we are focusing instead on ourselves versus actually trusting that the gospel can transform us and can make a people. So I think maybe just some practical ways would be obviously pay attention to your time, but that, you know, the second one would then be to pay attention to the things that you're formed by. And the third one would be then to commit maybe just some small things, small actions towards the people who are in your actual life. So like maybe you teach someone how to play tennis or they teach you how to knit or even just getting curious about why do you like knitting? I hate knitting. Tell me about that. You know, that begins to kind of broker some of those relationships that can feel strained or awkward.
So I know that, you know, you just talked about different things that we can do. One thing that was interesting in the movie was even one of the people, I think he was a professor or maybe he was a Silicon Valley executive, and he said, everyone looks at their phone just as they get up in the morning. Like whether you're, you know, using, you're looking at your phone before you go to the bathroom or you're looking at your phone, he literally said, while you're going to the bathroom. And I think that's something for Christians too, because we reflexively do that. Now we might not be looking at Facebook. We might be, say, looking at email. And they even talked about that too, where you're always working. And all the people that they interviewed that were tech executives were on the younger side. I mean, they were probably 30s, maybe early 40s at the oldest. And even they would say, like, should it be that big of a deal that Google email does all these really amazing things and you get all these pings and, you know, you're just dealing with your email, you're working. But by doing that, you're not giving your mind any rest or to be contemplative. And that's one thing about Christianity. It requires meditation in terms of, not in the Eastern sense, but thinking about the Word of God, thinking about the character of God, the person of God, entering in on Sundays to worship with a mind that's fixed to glorify God. And it's so hard when now, because of computers in our pockets, we're accessible. Maybe you're not on social media, but you're accessible to work 24/7.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you're on vacation, you know, people still check their email on vacation, you know?
Yes. And Andy Crouch has a book called The Tech Wise Family. And in that he talks about, you know, taking an hour a day a week and a week a year, right, off of tech entirely. And I think even that might be just a helpful way to guard, right, to guard Sabbath, to guard, you know, our time that we're eating dinner around the table with our families. And 1 week a year where we kind of detox from that availability and that sense of that we're always able to like chime in, or we're always available to our bosses, or we're always available to the, you know, wide internet.
Well, one thing I would suggest is practical, and I did this several years ago, was I turned off all notifications. I mean, not texting. I don't get a ton of texts, but you know, not texting, but every single social media that I have, I just turned off 100% of the notifications. So I have no idea unless I opened it up. And then another thing you can do on social media also, maybe people don't know this on Facebook, is you can just get inundated with just very banal stuff. In other words, someone replying to some long thread, you can turn off all notifications. If you feel like you have to make a comment, you can, and you can turn that all off and then you won't ever see anything for that. And there's ways to work around the algorithms, but I think that we need to be very conscious of our use. And another thing, I'm sure it's available on all smartphones, but I know for sure on the iPhone, is there's an app now that actually tracks your usage. So if you really want the truth about how much you're on social media, open that up and it'll tell you how long your phone has been open, how much you used every single social media, or you did internet searches and all those kinds of things.
Yes. And you can even set limits, which is nice too. And you could, you know, and even by the day of the week, for instance, so you can, Sundays, you can have limits that you aren't on social media as maybe a Sabbath practice. And when you do it, your phone will tell you.
Well, how about for parents? And I do want to kind of pivot and ask about that, because in this film, I thought it was not the most successful part. They have this kind of like dramatization of a family and, you know, some teenagers that are struggling with social media use. And I think that it's really important to help our kids navigate that. You talked about that a little bit, but what people think about you as a teenager and as a tween is really important, and it shouldn't be, you know, but it feels so major and dramatic when you're going through puberty and stuff. And before, in the old days, there wasn't social media. Now it's everywhere, where people can, like, where they can shade people. Like if there's a whole group of girls and you're in the picture, but they can't cut you out of the picture, they just don't tag you and things like that, so that you feel really bad. Or not everyone liked your prom dress that you put up there, but your other friend got, you know, 500 likes, and how come only you have 50 likes, and those kinds of things. How should parents help their kids navigate through that?
Oh, well, we're just starting that. My oldest is 13. He has a phone and he has a contract for, you know, the rules of the house and how we use it. But at this point, he does not have social media. And I imagine with my daughter, it might be a little bit harder because there is that kind of desire to connect and in a different way on social media. So we are new personally to it. But I would say, you know, to think about our, as much as we can, to think about our phones as tools. And so as much as they are not neutral, like with all these algorithms and stuff, to begin to have conversations with our children about some of these issues, right? To think about, okay, if it's a tool, you know, how do we actually have good boundaries around this tool? You know, what is appropriate? What is not appropriate? You know, certain things like you don't get to be friends with someone that you don't actually know in real life, that these would be kind of just some very beginning boundaries. We don't have phones in bedrooms, you know, like all of these sorts of things where we realize that we don't want our phones or social media particularly shaping how we do our family life. And focusing too, of course, on other things, positive things like getting children outside to exercise and to move their bodies, that they have time for unstructured play, that we are practicing family devotions, asking good questions around the dinner table. And so that part of our social media usage, we hope, especially as our children age, is to have good conversations about the things that social media brings up. You know, that if my daughter, as she ages, is feeling unloved or not beautiful, like where is that really coming from? And to begin to then point her to a God who loves her, no matter if she has the fancy prom dress or not. But it is tricky. And I think every family will make different choices. I think the important point is just to empower parents that they can make those choices. They get to actually be parents. Most of the executives who are interviewed in The Social Dilemma, their children either don't have phones or access to the internet, or they don't have social media at all. And these are the primarily men who have created these sorts of algorithms. They actually know the destructive effects and are prohibiting their children from having it.
You know, I read in some article about tech executives and parenting in the New York Times years ago that's what they see as a sign of status. Like the common user has phones and tablets and they don't because they go to flip phones so that they can't be tracked or have all of their images in the cloud or whatever. So I thought that was interesting. Like you were saying, they themselves don't. It's interesting too. I have two kids, one who's still in high school and he is a computer coding person and he understands how that works and he is not on social media and he is trying to not have a footprint at all. Although it's, you know, I don't think anybody could be totally off the grid, but he has zero social media. And so, but you know, there's an impact to that, especially with everybody else on social media. But if you don't have it at all, then you can't see what everyone else is doing and feel worried about it or whatever. So I think that's a good thing to take a break from time to time. And another way that you can do it, or at least how I use my social media practices is I might go on and I definitely post things, but I don't look at other people's pages. So I don't worry about what they're doing or their vacations or, you know, those kinds of things. So I think there's a way to limit it. You know what I mean? There's a way to like update, here's a picture of my happy Thanksgiving family or Christmas or whatever, and then just limit how you're looking at other pages and stuff like that. So this is certainly fascinating, but I want to now turn to ask some fun rapid fire questions for Ashley. But before I do, would you recommend Christians to watch this film?
I do. I think it would be a great start to begin to think about our own tech usage, as well as larger problems of the human heart, right, that created our technology, and to begin to maybe imagine better ways of formation for families and churches and individuals.
Well, on a more light note, I have these questions for you. So for Christmas dinner, do you guys do turkey or ham or something else?
We often do steaks.
I mentioned in the intro that you have a PhD from the University of Edinburgh. What is your PhD in?
English literature.
English literature. Okay, so what's your favorite novel?
Oh, that's a hard question. I would say the one that I've probably underlined the most and sat with the longest is Gilead by Marilynne Robinson.
And for Christmas, is your tree real or artificial?
It's not up yet, but we're going to get a real one.
And finally, does your family have any longstanding Christmas or holiday traditions that you do together?
We do something, we call it the Minivan Express, kind of based off the Polar Express. And one day during the Christmas season, we will leave a little ticket on each of our kids' beds. And then they come and they get it all punched like in the Polar Express, and we jump into our minivan and have cookies and hot chocolate and go find some great Christmas lights to drive by.
Oh, that's a very creative and fun idea. Well, thanks, Ashley, for being on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been great.
You've been listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Dr. Ashley Hales, who has written an online exclusive film review for the Christian Research Journal about the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma. You can read her article for free online at our website, equip.org, and her article is called The Social Dilemma and What It Means for Christians. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes, and please rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others see our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.